conversation is, you're right. You're right. I can't be successful. I won't be successful. Okay, I don't have it. I said, but I can win. And the moment I said I can win, it was like a paradigm shifted in my life, because I begin to see obstacles as opportunities. I begin to see obstacles as opportunities. You know, in your mindset, which means set in your mind, if your mind ends or your thinking stops at the obstacle, you'll never grow. In fact, you become a victim.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Grow Yourself Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin McNulty, and this is your personal development school of growth, where each week my guests and I will bring and break down big ideas and practices that will help you learn, grow, and succeed in life. Thanks for checking us out. Now let the growth begin. Hey, everybody. Kevin McNulty here again with the Grow Yourself Podcast, your personal development school of growth. Thank you so much for being here. Listen, this is a special podcast to me, and I'll tell you why, for a lot of different reasons. My guest, when I heard his story, it immediately resonated with me. I don't know, maybe some of you have ever heard me talk about this idea, this sort of pivotal moment in my life. I don't even know if it was pivotal to the positive, to the negative, but essentially I was in the ninth grade. I could barely, you know, pass my subjects. I was taking a pre-algebra class. I remember almost the first day, the teacher put the problem on the chalkboard, and I looked at it, and my brain just completely froze up. I had no idea what I was looking at, and I had this immediate panic as I looked around and saw other students seem to resonate. So she gave us a little formula. We were supposed to do some of our own work, and she comes walking around, and I'm looking at this little formula, probably the simplest thing you could have ever looked at in algebra, and I didn't have the first clue as to where to start. I was just completely frozen. I remember the teacher came by. I can still see her in my mind's eye. She stopped and watched me stare at the paper, and then she reached down with her pencil. She tried to guide me through it, and I just could not unfreeze myself. I was so stumped, and I remember this. I'll never forget. This is the moral, or sort of the point of this story. She touched me on the shoulder, and she said, "You'll get it." But you know what? I didn't get that as motivational. I got that as, "You'll be all right, young man. This just ain't for you." And it hurt me really bad. I'll never forget that thing. Well, my guest, he puts that story on steroids with what he's about to tell us in terms of his life story, and we're going to ask him about it. But my guest, his name is Sean Harper. Some of you may have heard his name before. He's a former NFL player turned CEO and one of the nation's leading corporate motivational speakers. And despite graduating last in his high school class with a 1.62 cumulative GPA and being voted the most likely to fail, Sean never settled for failure. He set his mind to play in the NFL while attending Indiana University. And by the way, I'm giving you the short version of it. There's a lot in between this little story. So, while attending Indiana State University after being drafted, he had a successful 7-year career as an offensive lineman with the LA Rams, Tennessee Titans, go Tennessee, Indiana Colts, and also in NFL Europe. Shortly after leaving the NFL, Sean founded his multi-million-dollar security firm, American Services and Protection, by translating the skills and disciplines that he learned from the NFL into corporate America. But also, he's known as, I call him Mr. Winologist, but he's known as the Winologist. Sean travels the nation breaking down elite-level strategies and methodologies used by professional athletes into simple concepts to help individuals and corporations win in their business and in life. His paradigm-shifting approach has helped transform thousands of individuals and corporations by reframing their mindset. Think about that. Their mindset from success to winning and activating their greatest potential to compete and dominate at the highest levels. Sean is also an author of several books. We'll ask him about that, but his book, and what we're going to talk about today, is The Winning Edge, a book that aims to inspire readers to achieve their goals and reach their full potential by adopting 8 key principles. There is so much to this man's life. I kid you not, that we can talk about. But today we're going to talk about the winning edge, and we're going to talk about the mindset and the power to win. You know, would you please welcome my special guest, Sean Harper? Sean, thank you so much for being with
thank you for having me. That was an absolutely awesome intro. One thing that you said that really caught my attention, and you know, I've heard it, I've spoke on it, but it's just the way that you presented that. And it talks about having experienced failure. You know, yeah. Unfortunately, you kind of touched on it in your actual personal story,
yeah.
Is that failure is used as a destination versus in life and with winning, failure is a waypoint. You know, and one of the first things that you have to do to be a winner is that you have to adjust your relationship to failure. In fact, failure is your friend, to the point that it's no longer failure, it's called tuition. Hey, this is my tuition for life in this particular wow. situation or circumstances. And then it allows you to what I call course correct. You move, you adjust, you pivot, you move, you adjust, you pivot. It's basically like flying in an actual airplane, and you're flying in this airplane and you're 32,000 feet. But if you dare to pay attention, you are constantly moving up and down, right and left at angles, because you're constantly and consistently off course, and you are course correcting. So that's one of the main secrets right off the bat. Aside from all that, thank you for having me. And let's go, let's win.
Listen, you know, let's win, man. I got to tell you, Sean, we're in similar field of work and topics. I don't know if you're associated with the National Speakers Association. I've been a part of that group. But here's my point. I've seen a lot of motivational speakers. I am a motivational speaker. I mean, I've seen a lot and I've focused in on, but I'll tell you, in my way of thinking, you bring a whole different level to motivational speaking. One of the things I noticed about you, because I've watched a lot of your speeches, I watch a lot of your podcasts where people have interviewed you. And I'll tell you what, using the terminology that I've heard today, you bring the receipts. I mean, I kind of measure a motivational speaker and an expert and a person with depth by, can he answer the questions?
Wow.
And that's one of the things that has always blown me away about you, is that I listen to podcasts and you go deep on a subject. And that's one of the reasons I'm so excited about here. But let me ask you this right off the bat.
Sure.
Before we get into the whole mindset thing, I'm very curious about, you know, what's it like to play in the NFL, where I'm sure anybody watching this can agree, you know, the NFL, the NBA, you know, let's talk about, you know, the superstars in rock and roll and R&B. That's a whole different level. It's right. A whole different level of thinking and behaving. What's that like? Please share with our audience. Get us the inside look.
Wow. The NFL is a game of perspectives. And it is important that you have the right perspective. In fact, the players that play the longest and have the most successful careers, or the winningest careers, are the individuals that have that, basically they have the proper perspective. So let me give you an example. A fan watches the game from a particular perspective. A coach coaches a game from a particular perspective. A player has a perspective. The media has a perspective. The owners, management, they have a perspective. And the players that play the game the longest are the ones that realize that this is a business in the facade of a sport. You are in the business of entertainment, and you have to have that perspective of doing your job, winning the game, and performing and playing. There's two separate. I don't want to really jump into that, but performing and playing the game, not just on a particular team's level, but on the NFL's level. The NFL is one huge team, and that's how it's ran. And if you have that perspective, your career, man, you can go from team to team, club to club, organization to organization, because you get it. Now, that's not only applicable in the NFL, that is applicable in life, in business. Wherever you go, you need to have the particular mindset and the particular perspective of that organization so that you can win and dominate in it.
I've never heard that before. I've certainly heard all the other things that you mentioned, but not about the perspective. And I think you just used the term that these types of players, and I watch a lot of NFL football, but the other big one I watch is tennis. And as I listen to you, I mean, I really like lock into tennis because for a lot of different reasons, but I recognize what you're saying, that tennis players, the best tennis players are not just great players. They recognize what you said, they get it. They know why they're there. So it's to play great tennis, but they're also entertaining the audience and they never forget that.
Right, right. And in fact, this is why there are certain players in the NFL who are extremely talented, but they never seem to get picked up by a team. Like, why is this guy fitting out? Because this individual, although they're talented, they're not good for the game. They're not good for the game. And yeah.
Wow, I've never heard that before. Okay. Sean, may I ask you, and I know you've done this a million times, but it's just part of your story. Mm-hmm. Would you mind just sharing with the listeners, the viewers, a little bit about your background, from whence you came, kind of who is Sean Harper? And just, again, I beg you, because I know you've told the story a million times, but okay. I would just love for us to hear this.
Right. So, you know, most people think, you know, a person that plays professional football, business owner, you know, yada, yada, yada. They're on, you know, a particular track. You know, they have the best of this, the best of that, sort of like an incubator. Like they're just being carried and catered to their entire life because of their skill set. But that was the polar opposite of me. You know, I remember standing in the second grade line and the teacher grabbing my left arm, pulling me back into the first grade line, repeating the first grade. By the time I was in the fifth grade, I was documented with 4 to 5 learning disabilities. My story was similar to your story, except I was being asked to go to the board and I can't write, and asked to be to read out loud, and I can't read. And students are laughing and cutting up and joking, and it just destroyed, dismantled, crushed my achievement ideology. I moved from being, you know, just a normal kid to a mad kid, and in the streets. You know, I would much rather deal with a bad person than a mad person, angry all the time. So much so that I was kicked out of 2 schools for disciplinary issues. I left high school with a 1.62 cumulative GPA, not on my ACT, voted most likely to fail, wasn't even honorable mention all conference in sports. I go off to a junior college in Mason City, Iowa. In the first year of that junior college, I sat the bench the entire year because I was performing to the level of expectations. And if I could just put a pin in that right there, you know, performing to the levels of people's expectations, that's kind of the way our educational system is set up, is that, you know, here's a particular expectation of what you're supposed to do. And then people perform to that, which is in some sense, okay for the masses, but it's horrible for outliers because outliers have unlimited potential. And sometimes our educational system in particular, or teachers or actual educators, can cap a student's potential because they don't grow, or they don't grow the way that they intend or within their system. So anything that's outside of their system, they would belittle, break, chip away, prune, or handicap to mold you into what they deem is a, you know, good, productive, educated individual. Well, unfortunately, I was totally on the outside of that spectrum. I'm on a totally different spectrum. And they didn't have the capacity for that. So it impacted my self-image. It crushed my self-esteem, struggling. And it was contagious. It not only started in sport, I started in school, and then it went to social life. And if I'm horrible in school and I'm horrible in social life, that means I'm horrible in sports. It just infiltrated every aspect of my life. And I get a phone call from a junior college in Mason City, Iowa. And I'm going off to this junior college in Iowa. In the first year, I sit on the bench the entire season, not one play. And I pick up the phone and I call my mom and I said 2 words, you know. I said, "Mom, I quit." Oh. And I'm expecting, you know, mom being, you know, a perfect nurturer, you know, because she raised all 6 of us all by herself. Okay. And I know she missed me, right? Baby, come home. You know, there's an easy way out, you know. And that's, I kind of cringe when I see parents giving their kids easy way out, you know, that easy way out, you know, that's, man, And but no, she put her foot down. She said, "No, you'll stay up there, buddy." And I'm at the junior college the second season, and I have this conversation. And the conversation is, "You're right. You're right. I can't be successful. I won't be successful. Okay, I don't have it." I said, "But I can win." And the moment I said I can win, it was like a paradigm shifted in my life, because I begin to see obstacles as opportunities. I begin to see obstacles as opportunities in your mindset, which means set your mind. If your mind ends or your thinking stops at the obstacle, you'll never grow. In fact, you become a victim. Okay. And victims always tend to focus on what they're going through. Victims look to what and where they're going to. Okay. So to be able to look past the obstacle, to look past the obstruction. And a winning mindset, I'm looking past that now. Okay, you are going to work for me. That opposition, you're going to work for me. That I'm going to turn you into an opportunity. And I begin to do what winners do. And from there, I went off to, well, I started the next season. Then I went to Indiana U University. From 1 year, I was voted into the Junior College Hall of Fame, first team all region, full scholarship to IU Bloomington, play there, draft in the NFL, third pick in the fourth round. Now, understand this, okay? I know I'm being long-winded, but just feel me out on this one,
No,
okay?
go with it,
The
man.
same person that left high school with a 1.62 accumulative GPA is the same individual that graduated from IU Bloomington. The same person that stuttered his entire life. I mean, I couldn't complete a sentence till college, is the same person speaking to you now. The same person that barely started, wasn't even honorable mention in high school football. It's the same person that played 7 years professional football. What shifted? What changed? It's
That's
the
my
same
question.
person. Well, simple is that I begin to see myself in a different light. Up until that moment, people's opinions became my reality. I got that quote from Les Brown. People's opinions became my reality. And I was, it's kind of like a bat. You know, a bat, for all intents and purposes, is blind. So it sends out sonars, signals, hundreds of times each second to gauge where it is. So now what happens is that when you avoid it with a sense of identity, you seek to develop an image, which is very dangerous, because now your image is external based versus identity, which is internal based. And so now I'm looking from everyone to say, "Who am I? Tell me who I am." And I'm bouncing off from person to person, situation from situation, circumstances to circumstances, carving and pulling my identity versus it coming from the inside out. Guy wrote a book named Maxwell Maltz, The Psycho-Cybernetics, and he talks about your self-concept. Okay, so in that moment, I defined and switched and changed my self-concept to that of a victim to a victor by saying, "You know what? I am a winner. I am a winner." See, all actions stem from thoughts. So all thoughts are from your belief systems. And that's where about 90% of all the self-help gurus stop. But there's one step deeper. Your belief system is embedded in your self-concept. Who are you? I'm a winner. And once I made that switch, then everything else had to fall in line.
I mean, that's mind blowing. Here's the thing, though. As I'm sitting there listening to you, I'm asking myself, okay, who's listening to Sean talk right now? It's not likely, obviously, the young man or woman in high school who may have been bullied or who may have some difficulties, with school or whatever the case might be. Okay, so then maybe it's the parents that are doing this. So I'm saying all that to ask this question then. How does the switch for the average, maybe let's say for the average person, how either does one flip that switch, or what does the parent do, or the person, or the mentor? If I run across somebody like this, where do I flip the switch?
Well, two questions, right? So let's start with the latter. If you are a parent, if you are especially a parent, or I'm sorry, if you are a parent or an actual mentor, well, then what I say is that you always speak to the king and the kid. So you never speak to who they are, you speak to whom or what they're going to become. You always speak to the potential that you see. You always acknowledge the potential that they see. And then when their actions are contrary to that, you always attack the actions, but you separate that from the individual. Sean, your actions are horrible. You're a great person. This is not like you, right? So I'm speaking to the person. In time, they will grow into your expectations. I kind of tripped over that some time back. It's like your expectations is huge. So if you are around people that only see what you are right now, it's not good, because it's really hard to grow past people's thoughts and expectations. See, death in life is in the power of the tongue, and you shall eat the fruit thereof. You have to watch your words. So people that are in authority, you speak to the potential. You identify that person as who they are in the future. Your greatness, you're amazing, you're powerful, you're anointed. Oh my goodness. And all it takes is for that person to change their focus. You see, right now, their current conditions is that they're focused on who they are right now in 2023 versus whom they could be or who they will become, or basically who they am waiting to be manifested into that. So I had to make the switch, which segues over to the individual. As an individual, I had to make the switch. I'm a winner, period. I'm a winner. That's who I am. I win. Now, all of a sudden, I'm speaking that, and it gets really deep, because now that I'm speaking that, I'm actually creating that. And then once I start to focus on that and to believe that and to conceive that, now I move out of creation and I move into manifestation. I'm a winner, and I win.
I got to tell you something real quick. So, you know, as just one of the great joys in my life, I coach a middle school tennis team. It's in the fall. Okay. So these are what, 11, 12, 13 year olds. And you know, if you've ever, well, you know, you have kids, I suppose, if you have middle schoolers, you know what the difficulty is sometimes, if that's that transition stage. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. A couple of years ago, two or three years ago, a parent showed up with their child, this young girl. She was, I think, in the eighth grade. She was very tall. I mean, she was probably, I bet you she's 5'8", 5'9". And she was rather large, too. I don't mean obese, but she was a big, big girl. And the mother came up and said, you know, she's interested in playing. She's never played before. And she's saying, Coach, she's kind of awkward, and she's very, you know, very uncertain of herself, and she's in a weird place because she's always taller and bigger, and just she was really awkward. And I remember watching her play for a little bit, and of course she made the team, but she didn't know that much about it. But I remember after a couple of practices, she had learned so fast in just a few practices. I walked up to her and her mother, and I told the young lady right from her mother, I said, I'll just make up her name and call her Amy. I said, Amy, you know, I see something in you. You know, you're picking this game up really fast, and you've only been out here a few times, and you really ought to think about doing something with it. Okay, eighth grade goes away. She never even really made, I don't know if she even made like the lineup. I mean, she played some matches and that. So it went away. A couple of years later, I went to just see some of my former students who are now in high school. And I asked who that person was, and it was her. And this girl was whacking that ball, and she was like number 3 on the team.
Wow.
I'm only bringing that up because I think I'm just offering an anecdote to what you just said, that sometimes it's just that speaking to that person's king or queen, speaking to their potential, that it maybe that can be a switch for people. Yes?
Yes. In fact, since we're talking about tennis and rather a large person, if you ever get a chance, or if people in your amazing community get a chance, I want you to Google something on YouTube. I want you to Google Serena Williams, teenager, reporter, father. Just put all those words together, and it's going to come up.
Serena Williams, teenager, reporter, father. Okay.
Yeah. So what happened is, I think she was like 9 or 10 years old. She was 10. And this reporter was like, so you're good. Can you win? And she's like, yes, I can win. And the reporter, very sinister, he said, wow, are you sure? And then he said it again, what makes you so confident? Break, spitting. And her father was there. And her father stood up and walked over and just ripped this guy on camera. He's basically, he's like, I see what you're doing. You're trying to break her. right now. So now if you look at Serena Williams, Venus Williams, and you look at Tiger Woods, what's so fascinating to me is that neither of these athletes came through in the traditional system.
That's true.
That they always had their father speaking life into them all the way through. And unfortunately, times, you know, you could put a student in front of a coach or a club, and over time, they will begin to cap themselves. They will begin to play under their potential. And the coach is supposed to recognize it, but he has an entire team. So there's no way that he can do that. Right. But yeah, that is extremely unfortunate. Being able to speak life and raise expectations, I think that parents and coaches and teachers vastly underestimate that. In fact, if I could be just a bit more long-winded, please. They did a survey, amazing survey, where they took two classrooms, right? They took two classrooms and they took the teacher. They said, teacher, this group right here is exceptional students. They're honor students. They're, you know, these are your future lawyers, doctors, engineers. I mean, she peppered it up. Like, I mean, you're going to, this class right here, they have it. This class over here, they need a little help. They're struggling. They're this and that. And it just went on and on, you know, and just laid it out right now. At the end of the experiment, there was a lot of kids that were, you know, average, there were a lot of kids placed in that average class. They underperformed. The ones that she praised were all the kids were average. And they became A and B students just off of expectations.
That's an amazing story to hear about that. So Sean, let me ask you this. Okay, I know you've said it. We've all heard it before. It's been preached from the beginning of time to believe in yourself. But my question is this: How does someone come to believe in themselves? Someone who doesn't believe in themselves.
Right.
How do you come to that place?
Yeah. So, as I said earlier, remember, all actions come from thoughts. All thoughts come from your belief, and that's where we get jacked up at. It's because you're asking to have an emotion off of what? You're having to believe in yourself based off of what?
Exactly.
Okay. So emotion comes after the fact. You see a scary movie? Scary movie's the fact. Oh, I'm scared. You see something? Oh, man, this what it is? Oh, I'm angry or sad. The fact comes, then the emotion, for the most part, right? So guess what? The fact is that I am one of 90 million sperm cells that fertilize the egg. I am the winner. I am a winner, period. End of discussion. Now let the emotion flow from that. And once the emotion flows from that fact, then you move into the manifestation phase. The fact is, it is irrefutable. According to science, I was the one sperm cell that made it. That's why I'm a winner. That's why we love sports. I mean, guaranteed, there's a fan out there right now. There's a fan out there right now. There's a fan out there, right? And there's a chance that your team is not number one. How much or how often are you going to wear that helmet or that hat or that shirt? You're not going to wear it. Now, it doesn't mean that you're going to throw it away. By God, you're not going to throw it away, your favorite team shirt. But you're not going to wear it. Now, take that same team, and they win the championship 4 or 5 years in a row. It is now in your wardrobe rotation. The only thing changed is that you won.
Wow.
Well, why is that so important? It's because you are, on a cellular level, coming back to the win. You can identify it from the cells in your body. You are a winner. That's why gaming in Vegas is such a big deal. It's 115 degrees sometime in the desert, and it's packed out. It's one of the top vacation places in the world off of one word, win.
Wow. You know, I'll take that to, I'll suggest this by taking that idea to another level, that there's often this concept that, you know, and even if, you know, if you ask somebody, they will say something differently, but we still operate this. We proceed this way that there are either winners or losers. What say you about that?
Everybody's a winner. See, when you get into the winners or the losers, now you're looking for external validation. Winning is the fullest expression of who you are mentally, spiritually, emotionally, financially, legacy. That is your win. Everyone is born with the win within, stealing that from Nike right now. Okay, so the greatest competitor in the win is not your external environment, it's you. You're fighting against yourself. You're pushing yourself into the 212.
Wow.
Right. I remember playing for the Indianapolis Colts and we won a particular game and there was a receiver and the receiver was standing there with his arms folded. He was upset. I'm like, man, we just won the game. Oh, I dropped a pass. I'm like, so, I mean, you're selfish, bro. We won the game. Nuh-uh. I dropped the pass. Oh. So what is that? Well, what it is that he is now focused on the inside game. There's a game within the game. There's a game within himself that he's playing. And he's like, you know what? I don't care what it says externally. I lost inside. I did not give 110%. When everyone else left, he went back to the training room and he trained some more. He lived some more. He worked his butt off that week. Flip it on the other side. I've seen players get cut, get kicked out the league, and they're walking out or may have got fired with their head high. Like, I gave it 110%. You're not going to dictate my win or lose.
Oh, wow.
It's from the inside out.
Wow. You know, I heard you on another podcast where you mentioned something about that, you know, that something about a coach of yours or something talked about the intangibles, the intangible qualities. You know, can you speak to that? And I think you spoke, I thought the it wasn't even metaphor, it was really the idea that of the linebackers and so forth standing inside of a box and how a coach had created this.
I talked about that.
Yes,
wow.
Yes, you did, man. And I'll tell you what.
Bring that back. Okay, so, you know, I played at Indiana University.
Yes.
Under Coach Mallory. And, you know, people wondered, you know, how is it that Indiana back then was so good that they were able to compete with, you know,
you said five-star players or something like this.
Yeah,
yes.
Well, it's because Coach Mallory focused on the actual intangibles. Number one, he focused on character. But the one intangible that he really focused on was grit. Like, you really, you know, grit and overperforming kind of eclipse talent. Consistency, grit, overperforming eclipse talent every single time. So when you play football, about maybe 15 to 20 yards horizontal, 8 yards back, you know, 15 yards, you know, it's like a big box. It's called the box. And it doesn't matter how good you are or how much talent you have in high school. In the box is the great equalizer. And despite the fact that you have speed and talent, which doesn't really matter in the box, you need tenacity. You need grit. You need consistency. You'd have to be just really, really just, it's called the code word for the box is controlled chaos. You have to be able to turn it on to the point of just losing it and shutting it down after 5 seconds and go back to the huddle for 25 seconds. Turn it on for 5-6 seconds, destroy, kill, and then shut it down. Controlled chaos. Speed and talent doesn't matter in the box.
You know, that's fascinating what you're saying, and I want to relate it to now in life. But what I hear you saying is that if I'm playing on offense – and I'm a receiver or whatever, running back, you're on defense and you all have established this box that it doesn't matter how fast I am. If I'm going into the box, it now comes down to, can I kick your ass inside the box? Can I,
yes.
Do I have the grit? Do I have the will and the savvy to operate inside there where you all have decided you're going to dominate that? That's
yes.
What you're saying, right?
Yes. It is literally a game within the game.
Wow.
It is, and it's darkness. What I mean by that, of course, it's light outside.
Sure.
But the focus is always, which is really interesting, the focus is always on the quarterback. The focus is always on the running back. The focus is always on the receivers. No one focuses on the box. No one focuses on the intangibles. And to the point to where you're watching the game, but you really can't name five starting offensive linemen. No one knows who we are. It's really dark in the box, and a lot of really wild things happen. But what makes it so interesting is what happens in the box has a direct correlation of the win of the game. Because if there's a breakdown in the box, the receiver's going to get sacked. Okay. If there's a breakdown in the box, the running back's not going to get, 100 yards a game. But people don't focus on that. But you need to focus on it.
How does that – what's the analogy connection to just life? What is the box in life?
Well, the box in life is what people don't see.
Okay.
The box in life is people don't see the consistency.
Oh, wow.
People don't see the sweat and the tears. The box in life is that when you see people on social media looking absolutely amazing, you don't see the sweat and the grind getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning, sitting there, rejection after rejection after rejection from label after label after label, and being consistent, being relentless. That's the box. No one sees that part of life. And then when they're like an instant overnight success, they're like, oh my God, you're successful. You're amazing. Can I have your autograph? And it's like, you have no idea. No idea what I went through. That's the box. That's the intangibles.
I remember since you mentioned, I remember listening to, a storyteller or something tell about, I think that it was a violinist, Horowitz or something. And a woman walked up to him after a concert, and, one of the great violinists in history, and said, sir, I would give my life to play like you. And his response was, ma'am, I did give my life to play like this.
Yes.
And that's the box right there, right?
Yes.
The determination, the hard work, the consistency over and over and over. So, Sean, think about the average person that might be listening to this podcast or watching it. Just the average person who either has had tremendous struggles in their life or is currently in a tremendous struggle in their life. How do they turn those struggles into a source of strength?
You keep pushing. What I mean by that is it's sort of like, I want to give everyone a visual. And the visual is that you're in the ocean, you're in Newport Beach, California, because that's where I see this at all the time, with the surfers in San Clemente. Mm. And you're on a surfboard and the wave is coming in. So what do? Well, you fly or you ride into the wave, and then you turn around at some point and you let that energy push you back to shore. You fly into it. The problem is a lot of people don't want to swim into it. They see it coming, then they run for cover. At some point, if you get your balance, you can turn around, and that is your energy. So you want greatness? You want to be an outlier? Then all of a sudden you're hit with all this adversity and struggle. That is your wave. That's the wave you're supposed to ride. It's like, and sometimes the greater the wave, the greater the ride. But you have a wrong perspective of that pressure. You have a wrong perspective of that rejection. You have a wrong perspective of that failure. So when you see it coming, you run instead of ride.
Yeah, I don't want to get knocked down again.
Right.
Rather, you're saying, head right into it.
Head into it. Now, you might need some counseling.
Okay.
You might need some encouragement.
Mm-hmm.
You might scrape your knees up a few times, mm-hmm. which is fine, because, if you look up, you can get up. So, but to actually prove the point, if you go to Google, which is really interesting. If you go to Google and you type in millionaire bankruptcies, mm-hmm. and you'll see that the average millionaire has filed for bankruptcy 3.5 times.
Oh, my goodness.
It's right on Google. And we all know Google's right. So, so you swim. So guess what? They fail and they got back up. It's like learning how to ride the bike. Get back on the bike.
What I love about what you're saying now, again, these are topics that I talk about a lot, and I hear people talk about them. What I absolutely love about what you're saying here, and you know, I can literally listen to you and see your mother talking to you, see your life that you've traversed through. It's the principle is simple. The action is simple. You're saying, get back up and go do it again. It's not sit around and think about it and analyze. I mean, okay, I'm not saying any of that is wrong, but you're saying, listen, if you want to turn your struggles into strengths, get back up and do it again and learn from that struggle. Get back up and do it again. Learn from that struggle, and pretty soon you're out in the middle of the ocean swimming around like a dolphin.
That's how we learned how to walk.
Hello.
We crawled, we stood up, we started taking, and then we fell.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing though, which is interesting, is that when we were kids, we had people encouraging us. And I think that's missing in 2023, 2024, whatever, is that we don't have people saying, hey, I believe in you. I support you. Let's go. We just have a bunch of naysayers and critics who critique us, and it breaks us. To have somebody on your team to say, hey, I'm not called to your vision, I'm called to you.
Oh,
wow.
Lord.
That right there is worth, that person is worth their weight in gold, which is why, I mean, think about this for a second. You have a high functioning athlete, you know, he's at the top of his or her game. Then why do they bring their friends along? Why do they have groupies? Well, they have groupies because it's needed. Entourage for, you know, actors and actresses. They got the few people that always speak in love that they can trust and encourage and motivate them. Entourage and politicians. They have them. Even kings had jousters and people who joked.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Because
there's a special place for a person that can do that in your life.
I remember a country artist, I was listening to her talk about somebody who had just died. I can't think of his name. But she her name was Tanya Tucker. She's quite famous and country singer, and she talked about it. I just don't remember who it was, a legacy country singer who had died. This was probably 10 years ago. And somebody was just interviewing her on the television, and he said, and she said, you know, tell me about so-and-so. And he goes, she says, you know, he used to call me up all the time. He'd say, Tanya, you know, I'm having some self-esteem problems. I think I'm going to go out to in the public and spend an hour and, you know, build my self-esteem back up. You know, it's that idea that, you know, he needed people to say, wow, how great you are.
We all need it.
We all need it. Yeah. You know,
probably not how great you are, but just encouraging.
Just encouraging. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
We all need that, especially now. My God.
So, Sean, I know we don't have a long time here with you, and I'm so very grateful for just this short amount of time, but I want to ask you about the winning edge, you know, 8 principles that will bring out the winner in you. Can you just share with the audience a little bit? I've actually started reading it, haven't gotten through it all, but, you know, share a principle or two or just a lesson from the book.
So back to the story when I said I can no longer be successful, I can't be successful, but I can win. I begin to pull things that winners do. Like one concept, and I don't know if I put it in a book or not, I forgot, is that winners always separate themselves. And when we're younger, we're taught inclusion. You know, we're supposed to be, you know, and I'm sorry, conformity. You know, we're taught to be conformist.
Right.
But winners are not conformists. Winners separate themselves. I remember writing 200 colleges by myself. Well, I wrote one letter Xerox to 200 times, but still, you know, with 200 schools.
Yeah.
Why? Because I'm trying to separate myself. I remember graduating a semester early just so I could be more marketable to other universities because winners separate themselves. That is a concept that is not taught. It's not taught on the success model, but it's taught on the winning model. Successful people are great at production. Winners are great at production and reproduction, both. And so basically what I'm doing is that I'm eclipsing, or I'm stepping out of the natural laws of success, and I'm pushing, I'm at the frails of spiritual laws. because you have to have, you know, help from spirit, from just an actual spiritual element to win the game. Winners are givers. I give, it comes back. It's a spiritual law. So I live my life to this day on that level, not just in the natural, but in the spiritual.
In the spiritual. Well, let me just ask you about that, if you don't mind. And I know you didn't know this was coming, but do you have a spiritual component to your life?
You know what? The spiritual component of my life is the most dominant aspect of my life. And just today I was having this conversation, praying to God. I'm like, you know, I think it's coming to the point where he wants to showcase that more. I was fearful of it because, you know, corporations and corporate America, we don't talk about that. And I didn't want them to be intimidated by, you know, Sean, you know, he's a spirit-filled believer, and maybe you can't have that because it's not, you know, politically correct. But it's like, that's, you know, funny. What? Yeah. Daggone it. It's the ultimate truth. And you can have facts, conjectures, you can have theories and hypotheses and not have truth. And one of the things that really seals a winner is that he bases his or her life off of truth, because it doesn't do you any good if you're trying to triangulate your life. Now, this is very important, that you're trying to triangulate your life. To triangulate, you need at least 3 points: where you're at, where you're going, and you have an unmovable point. And you're trying to triangulate your life and your points are off. And you spent your entire life doing everything right, but you wind up in a ditch because your points, your coordinates are off. So you know what? I've now aligned myself with the absolute coordinates, I believe. And then guess what? I'm going to dominate this game.
That's unbelievable what you're saying there. This is what I was talking about earlier. But Sean, I know you've spent some time in Nicaragua.
May I just... How do you know that? I got to hire you as a private investigator.
Well, you know, what I want to know is, you know, what did you learn from those people? I've been there twice. What did you learn from that some people don't know, that Nicaragua is, you know, the second poorest country in this hemisphere behind Haiti? What did you learn from a people who are so impoverished?
That love and
conquers all, baby.
Love and wealth are exclusive, or that's not the right word to say. Love basically is that they have nothing to do with each other. Oh, it's that you can exist in. Well, I mean, I remember one of the cutest things I've never shared this before, ever. And I was there helping with building homes in Nicaragua, you know, and this little 2-year-old kid, you know, and I grabbed her and put her on my lap, and she's just looking at me. I'm smiling at her, and she takes her finger and she pokes my belly. She's like, Gordo, right?
Gordo, yeah.
That means fat, right?
That's right.
Like, just call me fat. And she's smiling like, Gordo. I was like, the love humility and the grace. We're taught here that the more you have, the happier are, and it is absolute lie. That's, it's just 100%. Manufactured from the heart, and that's one of the greatest things I've learned.
I would love to get you as a witness to say to the people who are listening right now that if you spoke about perspective and how important it is, if you want to get perspective, go to an impoverished country.
Yes.
And, you know, I went there believing that I was going down there to help these people, and Lord have mercy, was it completely the other way around. They changed my life.
Yes.
I remember both of my daughters, you know, stating in some given way after, because I took them there as well, coming back a little bit agitated about the way that we, about the things we complain about. And seeing them down there.
You know what I do? When there's a problem, I always say to myself, just to gain perspective, first world problem. I always train, you know what? It could be that I don't have any food at all.
Yeah, how about that?
First world problem. It's not even first, it's like a 0.5 world problem, you know?
Yeah, your floor is on dirt. Well, listen, Sean, may I ask you to just take a moment to, you know, it's already obvious that you're a very successful man, but I could also say that you're a very good man, which is probably even more important. You're a spiritual man, and probably a modest man, perhaps, but I'm asking you not to be modest and tell my audience where they can find you, where they can find your books. You've written some children books, I believe.
I'm not finished with it yet.
Okay.
But I just wanted to just tackle the perspective of bullying.
Oh, interesting.
And I really wanted to like just unmask that. It's just an expression of low self-esteem.
Okay.
And the person that's being bullied is truly not the victim. It's the person doing the bullying because they're acting out with something that's wrong. There's an imbalance there, and they're taking it out. Okay, because if they're so cool and they have it all together, then why are they doing that? And I've implemented what's called the STOP method in that space. TOP, talk to other people. Never allow people or life to silence your voice. That's extremely important. So in reference to getting in contact with me, it's my website is Sean Harper Wins, SHAWNHARPERWINS. Now, if you go to Sean Harper, SHAWNHARPER, if you go to seanharper.co, not com, but .co, you'll have the opportunity of getting a copy of my book. A digital book. Yeah.
Say that again, because I want everybody to go get
it. SHAWNHARPER.co. You'll have a chance to get a free digital download of my book.
Yeah. And so they can find you at these two places.
Yes.
Your books, I'm sure I know it's on because I'm sitting here looking at it. It's on Amazon, The Winning Edge, 8 Principles That Will Bring Out the Winner in You. So just real quick, what are you up to, Sean? What are you up to these days?
Well, I just finished my online course. I had a course I've been sitting on for about a year. It's done. It's a pretty sharp course. I really do basically a deep dive on some secrets and tactics, not only for myself, but people that I've studied, like, you know, former athletes, and like what made Jackie Slater so great, what made Zach Crockett so amazing. And, you know, these are the kind of principles I've taken away from that as well. I'm really launching my non-for-profit Game Changers, because what's really upsetting to me is that a lot of the, how should I say this? A lot of the tools that could really help equip people are not available to the people who need it the most. You know, poverty is more than just a lack of money, it's a lack of resources. I would love to be able to bring some resources to people who have I believe, the greatest need. And so that's basically the two main projects that I'm working on now. Trying to be a TEDx speaker too. So,
listen, you know, I'm pretty sure it's almost funny to hear, almost laughable to hear you say that, because I'm pretty sure any TEDx around the world would take you like that. Yeah. So you probably just haven't tried yet.
No, I haven't. So okay. I started it yesterday.
Oh, good for you, man. Well, listen, I as I said at the beginning of this, I knew from the very beginning, the first time I heard you, I was like, No, this guy's different. He's not just a motivational speaker. There's a wise man right here. He's like the cattail. You remember the cattails that come out of the water and they look like furry things and they explode and spread their wings. Mm-hmm. And that's Sean Harper. He's matured and he's exploding and spreading his seed everywhere of wisdom and knowledge. And I can't tell you how grateful I am that you came here to share some of your wisdom. I appreciate you so much.
Thank you, guys. And thank you, sir.
It's 100% my pleasure. I'll talk to you soon, okay?
All right. You be blessed.
All right. Thank you.